It's Thursday, May 23rd. I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
And I'm Juanita Tolliver, and this is What a Day, the show where we're unsurprised by Nikki Haley's non-existent backbone.
After blasting Donald Trump on the campaign trail for months, especially after he questioned her husband's military service, Haley announced that she will, in fact, be voting for the former president.
Call it a lack of moral scruples.
That backbone's been on the run for quite some time.
On today's show, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito is outed by his neighbors for flying right-wing flags outside his home for the second time. Plus, several countries have come together to recognize a Palestinian state.
But first, on Wednesday, Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced plans to fast-track a Senate vote on a bill that would protect access to birth control and other contraceptives around the country. Yesterday, we told you how former president and current candidate Donald Trump flip-flopped on this very same issue, first telling a Pittsburgh TV station that he was considering a, quote, interesting policy on contraceptive access, and then taking to Truth Social later in the day to deny that he would ever do such a thing. As we know, GOP policies to impose restrictions on reproductive rights have been incredibly unpopular. They have lost at the ballot box every single time since the overturn of Roe back in 2022. And according to Democratic Senator Ed Markey, who is the lead sponsor of the Right to Contraception Act, the vote will be, quote, clarifying and force every Republican to go on the record on whether or not they believe that every American has the right to access contraception. To learn more about this bill and the strategy behind fast-tracking the vote, I spoke earlier with longtime Capitol Hill reporter Eugene Scott. I started by asking him what's in the bill and why Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is reintroducing it now.
So this bill is legislation that was introduced last year by a number of senators, including Edward Markey from Massachusetts and Mazie Hirono from Hawaii, that aims to codify and strengthen the right to contraception, which the Supreme Court, you know, first recognized more than 50 years ago. But this bill was introduced in 2023 after Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas wrote an opinion in 2022 in the decision that overturned Roe versus Wade. And in his opinion, Thomas wrote that he thought that the court should revisit past precedents.
Right.
One of those precedents was Griswold versus Connecticut, which is the decision that recognized the right to contraception.
And why is Schumer fast-tracking this vote now?
Well, June will be about 2 years since Roe versus Wade was overturned. And Democrats have been successful in pushing abortion rights forward by pointing to this Supreme Court decision and Republican efforts since then to restrict abortion. What Democrats now want to do is make the point that Republicans also want to restrict access to birth control, and they feel like the next few weeks will be an opportunity to really draw attention to that.
Right. And we talk a lot about on the show Trump's power over the GOP, but how much do you think his recent flip-flop on this very issue played into Schumer's decision-making here?
Well, it's certainly a factor, but the reality is Trump could flip-flop again before November on this issue and do something completely different once he gets in the White House. The reality is he is not always really consistent with where he stands on policy issues, especially those that could cause him to lose support with his base. And this is one of those. But this is something that Trump is trying to push to the states so that he doesn't really have to take responsibility for a position in a way that could hurt him in the general
right.
with people outside of his base.
I know that there have been efforts to pass this before that have failed. Democrats have the majority in the Senate, but is this expected to pass at this point? And why is it still important to push, even if it isn't?
Well, one of the reasons Schumer really wants to push this bill right now is he and a number of Democratic lawmakers really want to get Republicans on the record with voting against IVF and birth control and other reproductive rights
right.
topics before November so that Democrats can campaign against them, because there's a really good chance that Democrats could lose their majority. And Schumer is hoping that this could make it more difficult for Republicans to win.
And can we zoom out a little and talk about the bind that the GOP really finds themselves in over this issue, given, you know, just how unpopular anti-reproductive choice policies are?
I mean, it's incredibly unpopular. There's a poll from 538 that says that like more than 90% of Republicans support birth control pills. The reality is voting against making contraception a right doesn't really serve Republicans well, but we have seen Republicans continue to vote against reproductive rights that even members of their own party support, in part because the organizations and the donors that support Republican lawmakers aren't always on the same page as Republican voters.
That was my conversation with longtime Hill reporter Eugene Scott.
Thanks so much for that, Priyanka and Eugene. And a few blocks from the Capitol building, President Biden and First Lady Dr. Jill Biden welcomed the President and First Lady of Kenya for a state visit on Wednesday. The visit is the first state visit for any African president since 2008, and it marks the 60th anniversary of U.S.-Kenyan diplomatic relations. Now, there are reasonable questions about why former President Barack Obama did not invite any African heads of state for a state visit during his two terms in office.
Wow.
Though there are far fewer questions about why former President Donald Trump didn't extend any invitations given his harmful rhetoric.
Right. That one makes sense. But right. What is on the agenda for President Biden and Kenyan President William Ruto while he's here?
They have a lot of ground to cover during the next few days. Here's National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby outlining the agenda in a White House video posted on X.com.
The agenda is chock full of important discussions, everything from climate change and how we're working on that challenge together to clean energy technology, emerging technology opportunities, trade and investment opportunities, but most importantly, people-to-people ties and improving the relationships between the Kenyan people and the American people.
Who chose that background music?
Because it was a lot.
Get rid of them.
That sounded like the little xylophone in music class, elementary school, you know?
Cut ties immediately.
In all seriousness, though, according to reports, another topic that will be included in Biden's conversations with Ruto is Haiti. Kenya will be deploying 200 of the 1,000 troops to the Caribbean nation as part of a UN-approved multinational mission to support the Haitian police force as they combat the extreme gang violence and political unrest on the ground. According to CNN, the first delegation of the Kenyan command staff arrived in Haiti on Wednesday, and the mission is set to begin by the end of the month. In recognition of this effort and Kenya's longstanding partnership with the U.S., the Associated Press has reported that President Biden is planning to designate Kenya a major non-NATO ally.
Wow. Okay. So big deal. And while the U.S. has been less active in efforts to boost African economies, China and Russia have very notably expanded their footprint on the continent. So how has Kenyan President Ruto responded to this reality?
In a quote to the Washington Post, President Ruto is calling for more U.S. engagement, stating, quote, America needs to show up and, quote, democracy must deliver. Ruto also added that development is extremely difficult when a majority of the nation's budget goes toward foreign loans, including a $4.7 billion loan that Kenya borrowed from Chinese banks to finance a high-speed rail project that went dormant after the first stage of construction was completed in 2017. The next phase of the project is set to break ground in 2025. But the budgetary issue has resulted in critical responses to Ruto's state visit. Take a listen to what Agnes Mumbi Ngaro, a member of the East African Legislative Assembly, had to say about the visit on Citizen Kenya TV.
I would have told my hosts to give me a time to reorganize and then we can arrange it probably in 2-3 months' time. After probably I sort out our budget in the country.
I expect we will hear more about the budgetary issues Kenya is facing during the joint press conference with President Biden and President Ruto later today ahead of the state dinner. And speaking of the state dinner, there are reports that the White House will serve a surf and turf style dinner with lobster, short ribs, and chilled tomato soup. As Kenyan-Nigerian-American chef and author Keanu Moju told the Washington Post, I'm just picturing me serving cold soup to my mom, who was Kenyan, and she'd be like, why are you punishing me?
Yes, there is nothing wrong with this menu, but context is important. Like, you've got to know who you're serving this food to, and this seems like a wacky choice.
A wacky choice. That is a departure from protocol, where there is usually fusion between the host and visiting country leaders and cultures, but here we are. We'll have to wait and see how the Kenyan president and first lady react to being served cold soup, but that's the latest for now.
We'll get to some headlines in just a moment, but if you like our show, please make sure to subscribe and share it with your friends. We'll be right back after some ads. Let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito has been coming under fire after reports emerged last week that he was flying an upside-down American flag outside of his house in January 2021. The New York Times spoke with neighbors who saw and photographed the flag, which has been used as a Stop the Steal symbol by supporters of former President Donald Trump, who falsely claimed that Trump won the 2020 presidential election. It's extra wild because at the same time that this flag was flying, the Supreme Court was considering whether it would hear a 2020 election case. But it gets worse. New reports emerge that another right-wing flag, this time the Appeal to Heaven flag, was seen flying outside of Alito's beach house in New Jersey just last summer. That flag was carried by January 6th insurrectionists. And just to be super clear here, justices are not supposed to express any kind of political bias whatsoever, let alone fly these flags outside of their homes. At the end of last year, the court adopted a pretty performative ethics code. Seems too little too late here.
Yeah, I do appreciate Representative Steve Cohen of Tennessee for introducing a resolution in the House to censure Supreme Court Justice Alito. Also, I appreciate those neighbors who knew to document this crazy behavior.
More pictures, please. I need all of these neighbors. Snap all the pictures of all the crazy shit you see.
The families of 19 victims of the Uvalde school shooting reached a $2 million settlement with a small city on Wednesday. The families are now suing the school district and nearly 100 Texas Department of Public Safety officers who were involved in the bungled response to the shooting. Speaking at a press conference on Wednesday, Javier Casares, whose 9-year-old daughter Jackie died in the shooting, said the whole world saw the obvious failures that happened that day.
Justice and accountability has always been my main concern. We've been let down so many times. The time has come to do the right thing.
You can hear the heartbreak in his voice and the urgency around action here. It's been almost 2 years since a teenage gunman entered Robb Elementary School in May 2022, killing 19 children and two teachers in connecting classrooms. Police officers waited more than an hour to confront the shooter. While the settlement with the city is low, attorneys for the victim's family say they chose to settle to avoid a costly legal fight that could have left Uvalde bankrupt.
Spain, Ireland, and Norway announced on Wednesday that they plan to recognize Palestine as an independent state. It's a huge step in the Palestinian liberation movement and a blow to Israel's relationship with the European countries. But what does this announcement really mean? We called up our good friend Ben Rhodes, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Obama and the co-host of Pod Save the World. He said that it's a symbolic move, but it's still an important one.
There are about 140 countries in the UN General Assembly that recognize a Palestinian state. So this is a relatively small number to add to that. But it's three European countries, and Europe is a place where there's an underrepresentation of countries that recognize Palestine. And also, it's three countries sending a message. And I think that message conveys a frustration with U.S. policy, which has been to not recognize Palestine and to try to pursue a state through negotiations. These are three U.S. allies essentially saying we don't think that's right anymore.
Of course, Israel was pretty quick to condemn the decisions. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said it was, quote, a reward for terrorism.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is calling for a snap general election in the country on July 4th.
Now is the moment for Britain to choose its future, to decide whether we want to build on the progress we have made or risk going back to square one with no plan and no certainty.
A snap election is when a general election is called earlier than scheduled, usually every 5 years in the UK. While Sunak's call for new elections wasn't a surprise, the date was. It's months earlier than most analysts and government officials expected. Sunak didn't offer an explanation, and his announcement didn't go as planned. He was standing outside in increasingly heavy rain, and about halfway through his speech, activists started blasting a song known as an anthem of the opposition Labour Party.
Brutal.
I feel like the song was, "You about to lose your job."
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Sunak's Conservative Party is seeking to extend its 14-year control of the government, but it's facing massive headwinds. Most recent opinion polls in the country show the Conservatives trailing the Labour Party by around 20 points. I think my song prediction was accurate. And I think the other thing that's really telling about this decision and the date of July 4th is that the people within Sunak's own party are questioning why he would do something in the summer instead of the fall, because they're pointing to the election, they're pointing to what they can run on, and they don't seem to have a lot.
And while we're on the topic of July 4th, if you are sitting here wondering why they are doing this on holiday weekend, just a reminder, not a holiday across the pond, not something they recognize.
Nope.
And those are the headlines.
One more thing before we go, just in time for June, the Pride or Else collection just launched at the Cricut store. It includes designs for everyone, whether you're leading the parade or showing up as an ally. Allies, this month ain't about you, but you still get some merch. The collection also includes fresh versions of our best-selling Leave Trans Kids Alone, You Absolute Freaks merch. That's evergreen, unfortunately, especially as we told you yesterday, 25 states in the country have banned gender-affirming care for trans youth. Most importantly, a portion of proceeds from every order go to Cricut's Pride or Else Fund in support of organizations working to provide gender-affirming care and life-saving resources to queer and transgender communities across America. Prep for Pride at Cricut.com/store.
That is all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, take down Samuel Alito's freaky MAGA flags, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you're into reading and not just all the polls predicting major Conservative Party losses in the UK like me, well, today is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at Cricut.com/subscribe. I'm Juanita Tolliver.
I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
And hands off our birth control sickos. Yeah, no.
Yeah, get out of here with that.
You're not taking it. Mm-mm. You're not taking it. And I mean, Trump's going to forget he told you that he was going to take it. So yeah, there's that.
What a Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Natalie Bettendorf. We had production help today from Michelle Aloy, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our showrunner is Erica Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.